organised, for instance, a so-called snowball procession across the Witwatersrand, and then echoing a very effective similar campaign in the United States called the March of the Dimes, in which people marched through cities in the United States collecting money. And of course, you'll remember Franklin Roosevelt was one of the polio victims, so he had a high profile association. Following this very successful March of the Dimes in the United States, a South African March of the Tickies was set up to collect funds, both particularly for this polio research which was being pushed ahead. And the kind of fundraising activities which essentially this middle class supported appeal elicited tell of that particular culture. Piano recitals, horse shows, boxing matches. These were the means to raise funds on the back of the March of the Tickies and the snowball procession. As in the United States, publicity. Columns and columns in the newspapers, on radio, publicizing the need to fund research against polio. Publicity was at the heart of the campaign. It used popular advertising methods, which to the South African medical profession, a very conservative and staid medical profession, were quite remarkable and quite new. One of them said, "This smacks more of Madison Avenue than Hospital Hill in Johannesburg." But they worked. The publicity worked. By the end of 1949, that's just 1 year after the appeal had been launched, £500,000 had been raised for research. And to give you a sense of what that amounted to, that was nearly 20% of the total health budget of South Africa, raised by popular appeal by these essentially middle-class individuals, volunteers. And this large sum was used to set up the Polio Research Foundation under the aegis of the South African Institute of Medical Research in Johannesburg. By 1953, the Polio Research Foundation had built a new state-of-the-art laboratory, set of laboratories for itself in Johannesburg. Doctors not involved in polio research rather enviously looked at this and labelled it Polio Palace. And they received, as a result, a great surge ahead for developing a anti-polio vaccine. By 1954, they were very close to achieving success. A preliminary vaccine was ready, and this is exactly at the time, and it will tell you how forward and progressive and up and doing they were, exactly at the time that Jonas Salk, the virologist in the United States, had developed the polio vaccine there. So South African research, and they worked closely with Jonas Salk, there was quite a close collaboration, but independently, South Africa, this new Polio Research Foundation, produced by 1954 its own polio vaccine. Tellingly, only four countries in the world produced their own vaccine: the United States, Britain, Denmark, and South Africa. Again, telling you of the priority given to polio research because of those whose lives or whose children's lives were deemed to be most at risk. The distribution of this vaccine, however, was held back for a bit till September 1955 because of the need to repeat safety checks after a batch of the Jonas Salk vaccine had been withdrawn when a number of children vaccinated with this Salk vaccine in the United States actually developed paralytic polio. So they held back and they did another whole series of safety checks on the South African vaccine. Despite the serious reservations by some South African doctors about this vaccine, its long-term effects and the duration of the immunity which it promised really trumped all of those reservations, hesitations, circumspections. Public demand for it really reached very high proportions indeed, and very soon that initial supply of the Polio Research Foundation vaccine was exhausted, and rollout had to be halted for want of further stocks of the vaccine until 1956, when more would be manufactured. In 1956, and remember, that's the fourth polio epidemic beginning to emerge, in 1956, that emergence of the fourth pandemic quickly drained the new supply very, very extensively, and this created alarm and outrage amongst parents, and supposedly a black market for anti-polio vaccine grew up on the Witwatersrand front, as parents desperately anxious, panic-stricken, as the fourth epidemic began to gather pace, would pay almost anything for vaccine. In the indignant, angry words of one parent writing to the newspaper, whether it was one or 1,000 unfortunate children and adults who have to suffer as a result of the inefficiency and procrastination, the guilt for the pain and misery caused to the sufferers and their relatives must fall unequivocally on those who are in charge of the polio vaccine distribution. As the fourth epidemic reached crisis proportions early 1957, one MP referred to it as great mass hysteria. Hysteria which, and you will know something about South African culture to recognize the magnitude of this intervention, a blanket ban imposed on all school rugby matches. Amidst this hysteria, amidst this panic, this alarm, the Department of Public Health relented in its proud nationalist stance, which had said, South Africa will supply its own vaccine. We will not import from the United States. It, in the face of this huge pressure, public pressure, it agreed that batches of the Salk vaccine would be imported from the United States. The pressure from up in arms, panicky parents had proved indeed too strong for the government to sustain. Again, typical of the pressure put, again, a letter in the newspaper at the time, one father declared, every mother and father of a maimed, suffering, or dead child will curse those responsible if the suffering is due to lack of initiative, consideration of dollars, or national pride, or red tape. I think a glass of water. As a result of the government's altered stance, the acceptance of the need to import vaccine from the United States, by 1959, all the country's vaccine needs had been finally satisfied, and some 750,000 children had been vaccinated. Though not without a hitch or two, I was interested to find in the report of the Medical Office of Health of Cape Town, reporting on the vaccination campaign in 1959, the following. Reactions to the poliomyelitis injections were minimal. Amongst the 98,000 injections given, the only reactions occurring were in two school children who fainted shortly after the injection but revived rapidly after the injection of adrenaline. That clearly was not the queue that I was in when... But as I mentioned right at the beginning, I received two polio vaccines. There was an important sequel to the vaccination by injection campaign in South Africa. That 1956-57 epidemic had revealed that Salk's polio vaccine did not provide 100% immunity. And so the Polio Research Foundation began experimenting with making an oral polio vaccine using weakened or attenuated polio virus, particularly drawing on the experiments of another very distinguished American innovator, the virologist Albert Sabin. By 1960, the Polio Research Foundation was manufacturing its own Sabin-type oral polio vaccine, using a weakened polio virus rather than a dead polio virus, which is what Salk had used. And this had the virtue of conferring immunity in one shot against all three serotypes of the virus. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't say one shot, one swallow. Here you can see the virus being injected because it's a very young child, not on the sugar cube. Here's the oral vaccine being injected into a child, indeed in Johannesburg. This is the new vaccine. Over the next 12 months, as free immunization with this oral vaccine was provided nationwide, literally one could say one swallow made a summer for those 5.8 million young South Africans. A delightful cartoon from Abe Berry. Polio Immunization Center. The children are queuing up. They cannot wait to get raspberry flavor, strawberry, raspberry, strawberry, and then, delightful, look at this touch, Abe Berry. The cartoonist himself, Abe Berry. And the nurse is saying to this youngster who's licking his lips, "I'll say you're immune. This is the fourth time you've had yours." By the early 1960s, for the first time in 4 years, these 5.8 million children could swim and bathe without fear of contracting that summer virus. In 1963, vaccination with this oral vaccine was made compulsory for all newborns in South Africa. But by then, by 1963, notified cases had dropped dramatically. In 1963, notified cases of polio in South Africa stood at 342 for the year. That's about 10% of the 1956 figure. By 1963, polio epidemics were becoming a subject for historians and not for virologists. In the words of the Institute of Medical Research's historian, poliomyelitis had ceased to be a major medical and research problem. Only for guilt-ridden parents, for their crippled children, for those children themselves balancing on their crutches, on their calipers, using canes, only for them was polio not history. For them, polio was their present and indeed their future. One of them wistfully observed about that soft metallic click as the knee-locks of his calipers engaged. It was a sound that governed my life. Thank you.